Hello and welcome again to Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me as always is Nathan. And with us today, a special guest, Uncle Mike, who is the purveyor of the Strange Aeons board game, which we talked about not too long ago. We're going to do a quick little segment here where we just talk about kind of Strange Aeons, a little bit of second impressions, and give the mic over to Uncle Mike, and he can bitch and complain about Warhammer 40,000, even though he said that he wouldn't do it, and fuck it if you don't like it. I mean, it's part of the game. This is a wargaming podcast, people, so deal with the fact that we sometimes just don't talk about 40K and fantasy all the time. Whine and complain all you like. It's no big deal.
We have listeners?
It's true, but let's start the podcast as we normally do. I'm drinking scotch. Hey, big, big surprise. What are you drinking, Mike?
I got a Stella here. Ooh, fighting beer.
Fancy.
I have a Corona simply because my snooty beer is not cold enough.
Your snooty beer isn't in the... You just put it in the ice.
Yeah, so part two of the podcast, when we come back later, my snooty beer will be...
Your snooty beer is going to be up there, and we'll be suitably liquored as we are all together at Kyle's place, having a barbecue and having a good time. So, currently, what are we working on right now? I'm just picking up some more Strange Aeon models. I've been painting my stuff up. I'll show you when we get upstairs. I didn't get a chance to show you when you came in here, but I got my character painted up and some of my other guys done. And really quite enjoyed painting the models. Did my character in about an hour, kind of worked on the other guy in about under an hour, and he's just about done. So, you know, what we kind of talked about before when we were talking about Strange Aeons was that there's a certain amount of charm to just being able to paint a model, and even when we talked last week about how to speed paint and just how much I hate those goddamn fucking baubles hanging off of everything, and it's skulls and feathers and puffy shoulders and, oh, Jesus. So, like, this is great for me. I absolutely love it because you really just, you get to the meat of the models, and when they're done, you're really happy with the way that they look. And so, like, I'm looking forward to painting some more. I got a Wolfman up. That's my revenge for that maniac bullshit from before. I'll put that Wolfman down in a second just to fuck you.
Well, if I could interject. I mean,
no.
You like to talk. I get it. But I think that was one of the things we decided very early on was there's a lot of models out there with big shoulder pads and big crazy shit hanging all off of them, and I don't know. It's not horror. It's not. It doesn't have that feel, right? That you. I don't know. At least that I wanted. So, yeah, the models are fairly simple, as if you know, as in they're not fucking 80 pieces covered in thousands of bits of gack.
But well, that being said before, you're not trying to compete with Games Workshop.
Well, yeah, I'd be crazy. I mean, well, I'm crazy, but I'm not that kind of crazy. But yeah, I think. You know, there's a charm to painting a model in an evening or sitting down with your wife and painting a fucking model in an evening because then you've got a model. If you need 3 to 5 to play, well, fuck, you're a third of the way there.
Well, and it's not the daunting task of painting a Warhammer 40,000 army or Warhammer army. And like Nathan said when we talked about it, it is kind of the anti-Warhammer. And you and I had a chance to kind of talk about that. And you don't mean that in the negative way, but it's just, it's a different game. And trying to explain to people the idea of, well, no, you're not playing to win always. Like, you're not always just playing to win. It's not just about winning. And you know, like, losses do mean more in a sense, but, you know,
Indiana Jones guy.
I love that. Like, people were telling me, like, oh, you should just start over. I said, fuck no, that's where the character comes from. Like, I know that that's terrible, but he's fearless except for heights.
And again, there's so many games out there where you get better and better and better, and then, yeah, you're 80 level god, and no one can hurt you.
Like Mordheim.
That's fucking
and Inquisitor.
I love Mordheim. Yeah, okay, Inquisitor, whatever. But, I promised I wouldn't talk shit about Games Workshop.
I was going to make sure you talk
I love Mordheim.
That's
one of the greatest games ever for me, personally, and my friends. But, again, there's still a lot of clunk in it, a lot of things we didn't like. And, I don't know, I tried to address that with Strange Aeons, with the game mechanics. You know, it isn't... and again, tournament bugs me a lot, especially in Canada. Everything's a tournament. You're always trying to win a fucking coin or a little trophy or some fucking bauble. And at the expense of having...
A piece of plastic with best painted on
it. Well, at the expense of just sitting down and having fun with your buddies and being like, "Woo, that was wicked," and then you'll play it again. And that's, I don't know, that, to me, a game is something you play with your buddies and have fun. And a tournament game is kind of contrary to that, at least with my buddies. I mean, you know.
So from the point of view of, obviously, you have to sell this to people and you know, you're trying to get people into it. And you were saying you were going to be at a con recently?
Oh, yeah. There's a...
coming up?
The first international... Oh, no, international. The first Calgary... international sounds good. We'll put that in there.
Hey, it's country stand. It's international.
Yeah, it's the first Calgary... Wow, if I could say this, it'd be a fucking miracle. The first Calgary horror convention.
HorrorCon.
Thank you. First and 2nd of October at Wickham House... at Mount Royal. Boy, it'll be fun. You should come by and see me and my buddies playing some fucking games.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll sell you some stuff.
So if you were going to, if somebody's interested in picking up the game, because we did have a few people after we did the podcast who were asking, oh, well, how do you start? Like, what is it really, what are we looking for? Like, because people do have that mentality in their head from Games Workshop and other strategy battle tabletop games that they want to get what is good out of the gates. They don't want to experiment. They don't want to fuck around with like, oh, I grabbed the wrong guy and this totally killed me and now I have to go buy new stuff because now I know that this stuff sucks.
Yeah.
What would be your advice to somebody who wants to get into it but feels like, you know, I want to grab something that I feel is going to work for me and I'm going to be happy with?
Well, everything's built on a point system in the game and it's good guy versus bad guy. It's not your standard faction versus faction, as in I play Ratman, you play Ghostman, and we fight. It's, you know, you need 3 to 5 good guys, and they're just a profile that gets skills and injuries and everything else. And you need the same in bad guys, 3 to 5 bad guys. So really you're looking at a $30 rulebook, one pack of good guy figures, one pack of cultists, and maybe a monster of some kind, and that's all you need.
And again, well, and you do have a starter bundle on your website which is really good.
Thanks for selling my product. you can go ahead and get the starter bundle.
Well, that's what gave to us, was the starter bundle. And between two players, between Nathan and I, we were able to put together our starting stuff and have a game and really enjoy ourselves. And we didn't even use half the models.
Yeah, fair enough.
Not even close to half the models. I mean, we quite enjoyed
it. It's a very small scale, right? It's a quick, fast, fun game. And the hope is it's like a cliffhanger. So you play one and you're like, whoa, I'm going to play another one. And then you play another one.
We did a half hour and we didn't know what the fuck we were doing.
Yeah, exactly. and you muddled through a game and it was okay. As opposed to a 4-hour game, and I'm not naming anybody's games, but you know, you play a 4-hour game.
So subtle.
And you know you're going to, subtle's my middle name. And you're gonna fucking lose in the first turn, but still sit there for 4 hours and suck it up. That's not a good time. I mean, if you lose in my game in the first 4 minutes, then fuck whatever. It's get under 15 minutes, and then it's over. Drink your beer, take the fucking hit on the chin, and away you go. You know, play another one. I don't know. I can't convince people enough to buy my game and play it.
Well, obviously. Now, Nathan, you and Terry had picked up a bunch of stuff.
Yes. No, and that's exactly what it was, is actually shortly after our game, I sent Mike an email, said, hey, you know what, listen to the podcast if you want.
I didn't hate it. It was okay.
Oh, my God, he didn't hate something.
Yeah. At least as good as this one. Yeah.
You know, but like I said, I did that. I sent him an email and also, you know, went through his catalog of stuff, picked out a whole swack load of bad guys that I thought was really cool, and then wanted one pack of each of the good guys, because he only has 3 packs of good guys right now. So, I mean, for now.
I'm working on it.
No doubt. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, you know, because at the end of the day, when you look at
it. You only spend so much money. It can't be bad.
Well, it's the character. I just picked up a bunch of stuff right now, and you were even saying, like, can I have that one
character
out of there? Because Terry nabbed that shit, and Terry, I was pissed off that she took it, and I was just like, fuck you, I want it.
Yeah.
And again, hey, gaming nerds that have wives and girlfriends. You can play this game with them, and they won't fucking hate it.
Yeah.
It takes 20 minutes. They have a good time, and then you can do something else.
They don't have to paint up a ton of models.
Yeah, you know, and that was exactly the thing that we ended up doing as well, is, you know, I arranged with Mike that we, you know, we'd meet up somewhere, and we'd basically just grab all the stuff, and then, you know, while she was there, Mike grabbed the stuff, played Terry through a game. She had a blast, and that's when she started rooting through, grabbing her own models as well, you know. So it was just one of those things where it's super fast, it's super easy, and as we said before, it's not like Warhammer 40,000 where you're just like, hey, look, I've got to paint these 150 guys, and then I can play a game. Like, you know, bullshit. Like, you need to invest, like, 4 hours, two people need to invest 4 hours painting their stuff, and now you're good to go. You're ready to roll. You are absolutely ready to roll. So, I mean, for that, I picked it up. I sort of planned out my game. I don't actually have a core rule book because it's on back order. His game is so damn popular.
It's so popular.
You're welcome. Because it's clearly
it's
us.
It's the JD Gamer Cast
bump. On that note, thanks everybody that bought one. We're on our third printing in 2 years. So that's
impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty. I constantly don't make enough stuff, which is awesome, right? I mean, either I'm lazy or we have a lot of people that like the game.
Yeah,
it's probably a bit of both.
You and I were out having a smoke in the backyard, and you were actually talking about the second edition of the rulebook and some of the additions that you were talking about adding to the second edition. Now, this is when I found out that you're as much of a fan of Supernatural as we are.
I have to give you some credit because I think last time I saw you, I basically shit on your taste in movies.
You very much did. We had a long conversation about how I didn't know a damn thing.
You were treading water against me, sir. And then you
said, I was defending the prequels.
Yeah, exactly. We won't get into it because this is a hate for game podcast. Yes. Not a hate for movies. But and you'd suggest, you were like, well, have you seen Supernatural, you big smart asshole?
Right.
And I was like, no. What is it? And you're like, two hot brothers fight evil?
That was my exact words. Two hot and sexy brothers fighting demons.
And, yesterday, we finished the season 5 ender. And, yes. I mean, I don't know, I like it. And what I like is there's a lot of stuff in there that's already in Strange Aeons.
Yes. Well, that's why it was such an easy comparison to make.
But there's a lot of stuff that is in there that I thought was very clever, and we're going to steal, because that's how it works.
Tell him about it.
Okay, so...
Because he'll nerd out like I did.
Yeah, okay. So, for Halloween, we're putting in a free scenario, which we'll be playing with these guys later, to make sure it's balanced.
Oh, yeah.
Or against drunk people, I
guess.
Yes! Drunk people!
Wait, are you talking about my personal balance after drinking the entire night?
I wouldn't assume.
All right, legs, stand on one foot and count. Do the ABCs backwards.
Oh, no.
But also for a gag for Halloween, we're putting out rules for rock salt. So you can load up your shotgun. See, look, all the Supernatural nerds are like twiddling their fucking toes.
Yes! Rock salt in my shotgun!
So now you can shoot ghosts and send them back to their graves and blah, blah. It'll be fun. But watch for that, Halloweenish. And you'll see.
Excellent. No, that's great. And, you know, it's one of the crazy things, too, is, you know, despite not having the original rulebook in print for me to be able to sit down and geek out and, you know, sort of list build the way I do, you know, I did pick up both of the expansion packs, and despite, you know, not playing more than one game,
right?
I can honestly say that reading through the expansion sets was very, very interesting, and I liked a lot of the stuff that gets added, because in the first one, you even release more common weapons, so it's just like, without even getting into some of the more advanced
rules. You remember that was one of my complaints.
There is still no fucking common weapons.
Yes, there's still no crossbow.
I want a crossbow.
I know, everyone wants a crossbow. Hey, the one weapon I didn't make, everybody wants a crossbow. Okay, next fucking Halloween, there'll be a crossbow.
Excellent.
We'll call it a psyker crossbow. No. Fuck that. A psych-out crossbow.
You are allowed to slap him in the
seriously.
Face.
Yeah,
it is a jaded gamer cast tradition.
It's kind of now a tradition.
He's thinner than me. I can't really...
but no, you know, it is one of those things where, without even looking at the advanced rules, which I thought were very interesting, because the advanced rules in that first scenario straight up said, after you have won this many games and your list has gotten to this point... Congratulations, you got a promotion.
Yeah.
Here's some interesting stuff that can happen.
Oh, interesting.
But even without that, you still added in more bad guys, which you can just play any old
time.
There's
bad guys in both expansions.
Yes, there are. Yeah. There are.
It's like an extra 20.
I love the bad guys in that first expansion, because they include things like rogue agents and stuff, which I just thought was like effing cool. Whoa. You know?
Well, and there's all the super science stuff. Yes. So the first expansion is more like, totally, it's more the government agency, the promotions, the super science angle. The second expansion's all like big game hunters and dinosaurs.
Which was excellent.
That being said, it's still a horror mythos game, and we always try to include enough of that. I'm always very... I get sad if there isn't enough Lovecraft in it. Because I don't want people who are fans of the product to buy it and be like, oh, this one's all about killer robots. That's fucking dumb. Like,
right.
If you don't like killer robots, you probably didn't
at
get
its,
into my
at
game
its
for that.
Core, it's a horror.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really it.
Well, there's no horror game on the market for me. So we had to make one.
Yeah. Well, and that's what kind of what I wanted to get into as well, was just like, you know, you had kind of spoken to me a little bit, Nathan and I both, when we first went over to your place and looked at the facilities and kind of checked the game out.
The studio. About
The studio. Yes. See, you fit right into this show. Trust me.
Because we're in Kyle's studio right now.
We are in Kyle's studio at the moment.
It's not as nice as mine. It doesn't have as many tanks.
That's so true. Like you had said, like you just saw the gap in kind of that wargaming market, in the sense that, you know, like, oh, there's always fantasy, and there's always a little bit of this, and there's always a little bit of that, but, like, there's really nothing that's true horror. And for people who like horror and love those cool... There's lots of horror role-playing,
but there's no horror miniature game. Like, again, I was a kid, I grew up on the original Call of Cthulhu, Chill, you know, lots of... Like, even D&D had a lot of horror in it.
Right.
But it's... there. Horror doesn't translate very well to a tabletop, I think, which is why you see a lot of competitive gaming.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to be like, you know, does 4 beat 4? Well, it depends on a dice roll. But I think it's a lot harder to... I mean, maybe we haven't done it properly, but it's a lot harder to distill kind of a horror feeling into a game. I don't know. I mean,
right.
I'm not saying what we did was fucking genius or anything, but, I mean, you know, it's my attempt to reproduce that mm-hmm. on a tabletop.
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk about video games, what I really like in this Strange Aeons 2 is, almost like Silent Hill, where it's more about the atmospherics and the moods and the look of everything.
Right,
because,
yeah.
you know, if you're just going to bust out your Warhammer table and use your hills and your trees, you're really fucking missing out. Because one of the big things is again, right after Terry and I picked up all those models, the very next day, we were just cruising around and we were just talking out ideas on what we wanted to do for a board. And we, it was right before because I told you about it, where I was just like, you know, like an abandoned train yard. Like, you could do some crazy shit like that and make like a maze. Make like a maze. And then, again, it's not about, I'm on an open board, my bolt action has this range, I'm going to hit you on this.
Yeah, totally.
All of a sudden, it's all about sort of the mechanics and, oh my God, is the Wolfman going to be able to get me if I go around this corner? Or, what's there?
Well,
and I really like the atmosphere of the game because, again, it's very unique, it's very interesting, and you've never really seen it before. And,
right.
and I mean, this is a game more than, Warhammer or anything else, that it really is your imagination.
It's a narrative.
Narrative, and it's your imagination, and it's telling that story.
Making the game fun.
Right, right.
And I would argue the board is a wonderful experience. I love making scenery. I mean, I make scenery all the time. It's what I do to calm down or whatever. But it's a 2x3 board. I mean, if you try to do a 4x8, again, like one of these bigger games, these unnamed bigger games that I like so much. if you try to do a 4x8, it takes a shitload of terrain and a shitload of time to fill that table.
And you usually only build one board because of all the work that goes into it.
So you want it as basic as fucking possible. So you can slam your five buildings or your five hills on it, and you're done. And, I mean, a 2x3 board, like, I got one that I mounted a dinosaur in. Like, I bought a fucking plastic dinosaur skeleton, and it looks amazing because it takes up the entire fucking board. But I mean, it's one skeleton. I mean, anybody should be able to spend the time to put mm-hmm. together a 2x3 lump with some fucking hills on it or whatever. And they look very good. Again, they look succinct.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, they fit on your coffee table, so
yeah. Well, and that's the fun. Is
play game and put it away.
You always talk about
life. That'd be nice.
And even Games Workshop. You know, one of their goals over the last few years has really been building this idea of being able to have modular terrain and modular stuff where you can build it at various levels.
I own a lot of their terrain. I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you're able to play on a 3x2 board, it's really nice in the sense that you can have a game and you can build two or three or four boards. According to whatever you can come up with your mind, whether it's the abandoned train yard or whether like this one here, which is like the crypt and stuff that you have here for us to have a game on. And putting together three or four of these boards is the amount of work you would have for building one huge 8x4 board.
Absolutely.
But it's all character. Like, it's all just, you're able to really do something fun.
And even beyond that, I mean, for me, I live in a small place. I don't have the room to be able to have a Warhammer board. So it's one of those things where I've wanted for the longest time. But I mean, you need a fucking 4x6 table. You need, enough scenery for it, which means at least a box or two. So it's just like when you look at...
Well, you need a room in your house.
Basically, and that's exactly what it is. You basically need a room in your house. Even with the realm of battle board that you can paint and you can take down, you still need to, dedicate a closet towards holding the board because it's a big-ass case.
You need a big-ass table to put the fucking
thing on. And a big-ass table to put it on unless you're going to play Floorhammer, which is bullshit. At my age, I do not bend over and sit on the floor. I will never go back to Floorhammer. Yes,
neither of these guys have good knees, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. So it's just like, fuck that. So it's just like you need a big table, you need a closet to hold the realm of battle board, and the two boxes of scenery you need. Whereas this, if space is an issue, you can make one small 2x3 board. If you make the board itself rather generic, then you can have maybe one box of scenery, and that's going to let you throw on two or three different things.
Well,
because, again, the scale is very different.
And again, in my defense, I mean, I came here this evening, I brought a board, I brought 8 pieces of scenery.
It's not like you had brought a van.
Yeah, totally. It's the back seat of my car, has 3 things in it. And I set them up, and I'm ready to play games till fucking whenever. I mean, it's good to go.
Yeah,
and speaking of that, whenever, I'm out of beer, so...
Yeah, we're all...
we've all finished our drink here. Okay, so let's wrap it up here. Let's wrap it up. I think, we kind of getting into our second impressions, and I don't necessarily think that, we're going to have a whole lot. We're going to play a game. We're going to kind of get into it. We'll probably come back to it in a later podcast as well as we start talking about, like, things that we're working on and some of the stuff that we're doing. But I wanted to ambush you and just be like, tell us about Hobo Fight.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I can't say much about this. It's a product we're working on right now. It's called Hobo Deathmatch. And essentially, it's about as fucking lowbrow as you can possibly.
And I cannot tell you how excited I am.
I cannot
for that.
Wait.
Oh, you have no idea.
The polka dotted handkerchief. Like, that is his trademark. Playtesting has been
fantastic. It's a boxed betting game of bum battling where essentially. Both players. I need more beer.
Is
if I can still say
tagline?
That.
Tagline?
Yes, it is.
Jesus, that's awesome.
Currently, it's a tagline.
Keep it. That is a winner.
Essentially, you set up an alley with various piles of garbage and detritus. Each of you have a bum, and you fucking throw
you fight
bottles
over a ham
at each
sandwich.
Other. Yeah, totally. The guy who eats the half taco powers up and fucking hits the other guy with a bottle. And, dirty syringe trick. Yeah, it's good times.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I cannot wait at all.
Neither can I, strangely. But anyways, I'm off for beer. Gentlemen, thank you for having me. I'm sure we'll talk.
Yeah, it's been
later.
A pleasure. It's been a pleasure. And
I think we're going to drink a hell of a lot more before we play the game.
We'll
we're going to play some games.
A couple games.
We'll see whether we get a chance to record more tonight or if it's going to be maybe tomorrow evening
maybe
after
morning,
get over the hangover.
It all, so
yeah.
I'll just tell everybody now, go out and buy it before you listen to the
for sure. What's the website again?
I don't know. I don't go to my website that often.
I will post it again.
Yeah, we got
strangeaons.ca, I think.
Yeah, and then your store is the Uncle Mike's Worldwide or whatever it is.
I really wish I had this information to tell people. That would be fucking slick of me.
Wow, well to be prepared.
See, Hobo Deathmatch Ambush, he's totally okay
he's
for
out.
It. What is
What's
your URL?
Website?
What's your website? Boom. And he walks
know.
Out of the interview.
Like, and he's out. He's up.
I'm back. I actually have a third printing of the book. Which you were smart enough to put my fucking website in, so I wouldn't forget it. I think. www.strangeaons.ca. Strange-aeons.ca. I can't even say it right when I'm fucking looking at it. But yeah, go there and check out what a shit-together operation we are.
All right, well, Mike, you're all class.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks.
We like Mike here.
There you go.
You guys are okay. You gave me a mediocre review, and I like to sit between you. You both smell nice, so that's good.
All right, well, we're going to get into a gangbang, and we'll be back after that's done. Thanks, Mike.
Cool, man. Take it easy.
And we are back. All right. That was a fun night. I saw your wife's Facebook status.
Yes. Yes, I want to throw up like Papa.
You're like me. The true challenge is whether you can get into a car or not. Because that's when it's just like, and I lose it. Blah.
Hey, you know what? Actually, I didn't throw up. It was touch and go there for a little bit. But I was able to keep everything down.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so what am I? I am still nursing my hangover.
I can imagine.
All day today, I've just been fucking useless.
All right, so let's get on with the show here. We're going to jump backwards into higher learning a little bit, and we're going to do a quick bit of listener email coming in from Mr. Brian Sin. He says, I was wondering what your thoughts were on giving up on a game that is going bad. Some say that it's poor form to quit and not fair to the opponent, so you should play out every game. Others say that if you quit a game that is basically over anyway, that you'll have time for another game. Your thoughts? I think that this is pretty straightforward. I think it's kind of just, you know, it's that line between sportsmanship and between just, you know, letting somebody move on and play another game or, you know, kind of move forward. I think in a tournament, you just have to know the difference. And even in a casual game, for sure, you just have to know the difference between giving up on a game that is over and it's clearly over and giving up on a game that's just going badly. Because he says that at the beginning of his email where he says it on a game that's going badly. Well, it's just like, well, it can be going badly in the first or second turn, which is typically too early to give up on a game unless your entire army's literally been wiped off the table.
Well, hell, I mean, we played a game once back when we were both still working with John Kingsway for the staff tournament there.
And it was one of those games where, you know, we were playing after hours, so it was like fucking 10 o'clock. And the first three turns was all me. My dice couldn't hit, you know, couldn't miss. Your dice couldn't hit. And you were straight up considering just, you know,
yep, I was ready to quit.
It's just like, you know what, I'm just going to quit because, fuck, it's almost 10:30. We're both opening tomorrow morning. Like, it's just like, this is bullshit. And then turn four happened, and all of my dice just...
abandoned you.
Oh, good Lord. To this day, that is probably still the worst dice fucking I've ever experienced. You know... This, yes, and you were able to pull it out.
Yeah.
So for me, I think you absolutely nailed it. It's one of those issues where you have to be able to see there is absolutely no way for me to win this game. And, you know, things just look bad and it's the last game of the day and I'm tired. And, you know, like because all of those things always play a factor in it. Because, I mean, I've played games on both ends, you know, both winning and losing, where it's just like, fuck, there's absolutely nothing I can do. Mm-hmm. And when I, you know, when you're winning, you don't want to broach that subject. You don't want to be like, hey, look, dude, there's nothing you can do. Do you just want to pack it in?
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing that I was going to say is if you want to really focus on sportsmanship, just ask. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's the guy who's just like, fuck this, I quit, and walks away from the table. Yeah, that can be a little bit bad, you know. Usually the best thing to do if you are kind of looking at this game going like, you know what, it's not worth playing, I'm going to move on, is just ask your opponent, hey, do you mind if I concede here? And, you know, a lot of times what you'll find out is your opponent will sit there and look at you and say like, ah, you know what, let's just keep playing. Let's play it out.
Yeah. Hey,
and then you suck it up and keep going.
That actually happened at Out of the Basement when I actually was playing Brian Sin, because I had one very good turn, and then his chance to kind of turn that luck around went disastrously for him, because this was when his horde of 100 Night Goblins, 10x10, charged my Bloodletters, drew combat, lost because they didn't have a musician, and broke and ran, and his big unit of Squigs charged my Bloodthirster, lost combat, and exploded.
Yes.
You know, because with Squigs, when they run, they just do damage to everything around them and you remove them. So it was just like every chance, you know, everything that he tried to do to kind of get back into the game just went disastrously. And, you know, at the end of the turn, he was looking at having like 6 or 7 models. And I asked him, I was just like, you know what, you know, things went really bad for you. Do you just want to call it? And he straight up said, you know what? No, I want to see if there's any way I can just have models on the board at the end of the game. So I was like, hey, you know what? Power to you. Like,
points
just,
are points.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know, when I'm winning that well, I know you're not having fun and I'm not really having fun. So it's one of those things where it's just like, yeah, like it's so awkward. Like, I don't think that any amount of practice or any amount of advice will ever, you know, give you the how to, but you're right. You don't want to be the guy that just storms off, you know, like looks like he's about to flip the table. You also don't want to be the guy, if you're winning it, to just be like, hey, you might as well just pack it in because there's nothing you can do to me. Cause you know, you're just pissing him off, but you know what? Ask, because yeah, if he's really not having fun and there's tons of time left, you know, and if you're winning, you can just be like, hey, why don't we just call this? I'll go get you a coffee or a beer. Although, if Vegas is any indication, I am a poor judge of legal drinking age when I offer to buy beers for my opponents. So
that's all right. It's Vegas. Nobody cares. Yeah. So true. I think I hope that answers your question, Brian. Thank you for writing us the email, because I do think that there is always, in any sportsmanship situation, people are going to take things differently than the next person. And some people will just say like, yeah, I'll take total massacre victory at this point and walk away happy and go get something to eat and take a piss. And some people are there to game and they want to have something fun. And I'm talking specifically about tournaments. When it's a casual game, I find that you should almost always play it through, even if it's going bad for you, specifically because it's great practice.
Yes.
Segue into the topic of our show today, which is practice games. And this kind of lost art that's kind of gone to the background on the scene, especially for Warhammer 40,000, for a lot of very competitive gamers. It's been said in the past, the best thing you can do is play the army, not play the list. Because the list is rigid, it's unflexible, and you're not going to be able to deal with things that are going to pop up on you or unorthodox players. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that they're bad lists. You know, it's not to say that all of those playing a rigid list or playing the same list over and over again is autopilot. But I think that a lot of people out there have stopped looking at Warhammer and, you know, and their associations with tournament and tournament prep, because we had another person ask us about tournament prep and kind of what they do. And they just forget about the idea of practice games. One of the reasons why I have about an extra 500 to 600 points of every army that I own outside of the main list that I play is because of practice games. It's always just, you know, hey, what about this unit? Maybe I can make this unit work. Like, it doesn't seem like it would work, but maybe I'll give it a shot. Paint it up, put it on the table, give it a try in a few games, and if it doesn't work, move on or go back or try something mm-hmm. different. And so I feel like that's really, really important for anybody who, A, wants to be competitive, and B, also just wants to be able to play more games without this feeling of, I have to win, because losing will teach you more than winning does.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, if you win because everything goes right, you don't learn anything from it. Because if everything goes right, all you're doing is rolling dice. You know, you're not really thinking because, you know, you've played your list so much, it's ingrained in you. You know, this is how I need to move. These is the target priorities for these units. You know, like if you're playing Eldar, your Dark Reapers aren't shooting at tanks because they shouldn't, right? Like,
right.
It's just one of those things. So it's just like you've ingrained your target priorities, the way you want to move, you know, everything in. And so if everything goes right and you get a steamroll victory, you didn't learn anything other than maybe a unique, you know, dice rolling technique. I used the Vindaloo on that leadership roll, you
right.
know? Like, that's all you're doing. But when you lose, you have to really look at that and say, why did I lose? Was it because his list was superior or his generalship was superior? Did mm-hmm. he outmaneuver me? Did he do something that I didn't expect?
Mm-hmm.
Did he catch me with my pants down? And it's when you're able to look at that loss and you're able to take, you know, start analyzing it, that's when you're going to make improvements. And I mean, especially if you're playing in a tournament, ask the guy.
Yep.
Like, if he did something, just be like, you know, holy shit, dude, like, how, you know, what did you do? Like, you know, how did you figure that
out?
Like,
your plan?
Why did you even think of that? Yeah, what was your plan? Walk me through it, because you totally blindsided me with it. You know, because even just little things like that is going to sort of enlighten you and make it so that you're not going to get caught by surprise a second time.
Right.
Unless you're some players. God, I watched a game Terry was playing at one tournament with her Tau, and her age-old trick with her ethereal was always bait a unit of stealth suits. Assault squad jumps in, fires off their pistols, kills two guys, which is enough for a morale check. Use for the ethereal reroll to make sure that they fall back.
Right.
Thus pulling them out of charge range, leaving the assaulting unit out in the open with their pants down, and then blast the ever-living fuck out of it with your Tau firepower. Now, this is a trick that works once.
Mm-hmm.
Except this one guy, I was watching her play at Conflict Vancouver in like game 4. The guy, it's just like she did it to him like 4 times. And I'm just like, for the love of God, man, like fucking learn. Like, this is getting embarrassing for you. But you know, and that's exactly the point why you want to practice is when you do practice. And there's tons and tons and tons of ways that you can practice.
Yes. And we'll kind of get into the ways that you can practice as we kind of move on. I wanted to touch on what you had said about, you know, tricks that only work once.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we talk about net lists and we talk about playing the same list over and over again in these kind of rigid lists, it's not that it's an issue of the trick only working once. It's that you only have so many of them. And yeah, you're not going to play the same guy multiple times in the tournament in most tournaments. But, you know, it's very likely that he's played against other armies that have the exact same bag of tricks. And you're not going to be able to kind of squeak those victories out by using these little tricks. Now, part of practicing, and there's been some stupid comments about, you know, how people practice and what they practice and the whole idea of, oh, practicing, it doesn't really do anything. It doesn't really, you know, it's not a fact. You shouldn't need to practice because if your tactics are good. And I do disagree with that. I think it's a ridiculous statement because I know that if I start with a new army that I have not been playing that long, the first 10 games, I still do not have a grasp on that army. 20 games in, I start getting a grasp on that army. 30 games in, I'm now comfortable with everything and the ins and outs of this army. And that's if I'm not continually changing the lists. Well, so you have to put yourself out there to start just racking up those games. And if you never change your list and you keep playing the same way, then you're just hoping your opponent doesn't know how you're playing. Like, they can't see exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, and that's a really good point, is when you do start a new army, you know, the first little while is just wrapping your head around the way the army plays to the point where you're not even really playing your list. You're still just feeling it out. You're trying to figure out strengths, weaknesses. Because I mean, that was one thing with my demons is, you know, I tried to play practice games, but because I was painting, you know, before Vegas, but I was painting them for so long and so hard there at the end that it's just like, I think I played like 5-6 games. So when I got to Vegas, it was one of those things where I was still making fucking rookie mistakes from, you know, from both the army perspective. And now in hindsight, I look at my list and that list was a piece of shit. Cause you know, I've played probably 60, 70 games with them now.
Right.
I'm very comfortable with them. I understand the ins and outs. Although to this day, I still forget my army causes fear.
Yeah. Oh no, I know. Well, I'm the same way with my Lizardmen. I constantly screw up rules. I'm constantly forgetting specific little, you know, tidbits that kind of go with it. And yeah, certain things that cause fear and or terror, or the way certain units are able to do damage. Like I still forget stomps and thunder stomps. Like it's part, like I've only really had about, I think, 12 games with my lizard men right now.
Yeah.
So really not that many. Like I feel comfortable with them, but like I'm still putting in new stuff. I'm painting up a Carnosaur Lord. You know, I'm doing up some more stuff for my BSB. Doing some skink chiefs and, you know, skink priests. And because I want to try new things, it's all part of practicing it and really understand what these things can and cannot do. Cause I think that that's one of the most important things about practice games, is really just understanding what can this unit do. And I think it's more important in Warhammer. This particular aspect is more important in Warhammer than it is in 40,000.
Actually, I disagree with that, because I find that in Warhammer, like, yeah, you know, when you start looking at some of the weirder, you know, special and rare choices, you know, like salamanders, for example, you're going to look at them and, you're, you know, their obvious use is try to line up flanks and fire things. But then you want to start feeling them out. What kinds of units can I beat in combat? What kind of units do I need to sort of avoid at all costs? You know, where's their optimal standard shoot range? But in Warhammer 40,000, especially with the newer books where they're loading you up with equipment and stuff, I find that you need a hell of a lot more sort of practice games, because just like, okay, how good are these things versus dreadnoughts in combat? Like, it can, you know, can I rely? can I rely on the crack grenades? What about if I were to charge the tank over here to try to deal with anti-vehicle? What about a monstrous creature? What about you know, close combat, in cover, out of cover? Like, I find in 40K there are so many other things, and that's why on one of these threads that kind of spawned the topic, I straight up told the, you know, one of the guard players, you know, fuck Tim.
Tim.
I told Tim.
You told Tim.
I told Tim, play your list with no meltaguns. I'm just like, learn to blow up tanks without using a single meltagun. And you know, he just shrugged me off, where he's like, that's stupid, because I'm just going to lose to a mech list. But the whole point of the exercise is, what if, you know, the player comes at you sideways, he's got this sort of unorthodox Corsair Con sort of outflanking list, and he's able to come at you from the side and, you know, limit you to only having one or two melta guns from your infantry platoons, where it's just like, so you've got two guns that hit on a 4+, and he's got 3 or 4 tanks. What do you do?
Right.
How do you react to that situation? Because the rest of your melta guns are out of position. They're not going to be able to get there. Well, there are still ways to blow up tanks, especially if you play guard, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, like, it's one of those things where, you know, and that is one way to practice. And it is sort of an extreme way.
Right.
You know, where you're basically going to say, I'm going to take out this crutch of my army. And say, I'm going to deal with, you know, I'm going to take it out, and I'm going to try to come up with every sort of creative off-the-wall way to still fill that hole and see how you can do.
See, but to me, I look at your argument here with regards to fantasy and or with regards to 40K, and I think to myself, well, it's fairly clear, should you be putting them in against a monstrous creature? Should you be putting them in against, you know, a dreadnought? Because strength and power weapons and power fists and things of that nature are so prevalent in Warhammer 40,000 that it's clear. Like, it's it, listen, if you don't have a power fist or you don't have melta bombs or you don't have all this kind of stuff, like, of course you're not going to put it in against a dreadnought. The spread of strength to toughness in Warhammer 40,000 is much wider than it is in fantasy. And, of course, in fantasy, everything wounds on a 6. So you might go in there with an entire unit that's all strength 3, but they've got poison attacks or they've got so many damn attacks that you're still doing 4 or 5 wounds against something that's got such a high toughness. And then, of course, because strength modifies armor save, you know, hey, 4+ armor save is great. Unless they're strength 4, then it's 5+, and that's shit. You know, like, I feel like in Warhammer Fantasy, you're going to have a unit, and unless you've got one end of the spectrum to the other, or you've got really small numbers or really high numbers, everything in that middle ground is going to have to, you're just going to have to play it enough times to kind of say, like, okay, well, can my Saurus Warriors handle, you know, 16 Chaos Chosen? Like, can my Saurus Warriors handle, you know, 5 Knights? Can my Saurus Warriors handle going up against a horde of 50 Goblins? You know what I mean? And that's, it's also because in fantasy, the number of attacks is so much higher in combat, as opposed to 40K, where it's just like, well, I'm rolling anywhere from 5 to 12 dice on average.
As a Tyranid player,
oh, for fuck's sake,
who rolls 100 dice in a combat, I disagree. You know what? I don't think.
All right, let's all say it together. Let's all say it together. Nathan, it's not about your Tyranids.
It is always about my Tyranids, right. And if I ever sell that army, it will be about my Wood Elves.
Oh, so no, it will be about the Tyranids you used to have. I don't think you'll ever let. I don't think you'll ever let go of them. Even if you sell them, you will never let go of that.
That's
of that.
Fair.
You'll be like an ex-girlfriend. That's all it will be. I used to date this bitch, fucking Queen of the Harpies.
Possibly.
All right, so let's move on here and get into ways of practicing, because I think you touched on that really good with the whole, you know what, get rid of 90% of your Meltaguns and see what you can do. Can you win games like that? Yeah, I think that that's a great thing. One of the long, long time tricks is... switch and let your opponent play your army and you play your opponent's army, or blind deployment. And I know people are going to whine and complain and say, like, oh, nobody ever does blind deployment. It doesn't, you know, like, when are you ever going to have to worry about that? But I think blind deployment is a great way to practice, just because you're out of position, and it teaches you how to deal with your army when it's out of position and you have your entire army on the table and you do not have room to maneuver. There are special rules in fantasy for certain characters that allow you to redeploy some units. There's obviously issues where you're going to have scouts and ambushers and things of that nature who are going to infiltrate, or they're going to, you know, get into various parts of the board, and you're going to have to kind of quickly redeploy yourself. And if you're not a seasoned veteran with deployment, and I think even the seasoned veterans, you know, a seasoned veteran will still find that 10% of his army is out of place at the beginning of the game, just because you're not deploying all at once. Most of the time, you know. So I think that's a great way to learn it. Now, a lot of people would just, you know, like, oh, put a bed sheet in the middle of the table and everyone deploy. I saw one person just made like a big cardboard standee, and it just sat. They just put it in the middle of the table. Both sides set up their army. And then, you know, pull up the cardboard, roll for first turn, and go for it. And it was, you know, like, it's very interesting to play that game. And I don't think people play those games anymore. And I don't think that people, again, because I don't think people are thinking of, how do I practice? Like, how do I make myself better? And as we keep saying, it's not playing a rigid army over and over and over and over and over again. And just thinking, like, you know, oh, I know everything ins and outs. So it's just like, you know, if I play it this way, I win 80% of the time. Yay. Well,
and the worst part is I find that if your idea of practice is sort of picking the list you're going to go to a tournament, playing nothing but that in every game, in every scenario, in every situation, I find that actually does make you almost a worse general, because rather than looking at options, you become very rigid in your playstyle, because you know my Hormigaunts need to run forward and charge no matter what they're doing. So I'm, you know, and they need infantry, so I'm never going to divert them towards here. I'm never going to, you know, bait with them. I'm only ever going to run them forward because that's what they're good at, you know. And it's those kind of mentalities that limit you and allow you to get taken by surprise. Because if you're just like, oh, he's playing that, well, I know everything he's going to do because this is what I do, right? You know, and every time I've played it with my list, this is what he's done. But, you know, if you do things like the blind deploy, it, like I said, you can be completely out of position, absolutely 100% out of position. So now what do you do? How do you overcome that obstacle? And I mean, other ways of doing it, which was something that Terry was saying with her blog post, was build in known weaknesses in your list. And that was one of the things with, you know, take no melta guns. I know this is a weakness. I don't have good enough anti-tank, but can I still deal with tanks? You know, intentionally make it so that you have absolutely no way to win a close combat and then play against close combat armies. You know, make it so you're just like, look, I have nothing but shooting units. I have no power weapons, no power fists. You know, I'm basically playing Tau, and you're playing, you know, Thunderwolf Cav, or you're playing all, you know, Descent of Angels, Blood Angel. You know, it's just like pick a combat army and pair against it and try to come up with the ways that you can still win those games. Because, again, you know, the whole point of this is so that when you go to a tournament, you're going to win at least best general, right? You know, because right. I mean, obviously there's painting scores and sportsmanship scores
at a good tournament.
Unless you go to Ardboys or you know, War Games Con or, you know, anything like that where they're who cares about that, that noise. But, you know, like, so I mean, there are so many aspects to it. But if you are used to playing with a completely unoptimal list that has giant gaping holes, and you can still win games with that, then when you plug those holes and you go to a tournament, you're just in a better place because you're thinking better. Now, this isn't me saying never play your tournament list.
Right, obviously. Because again, we're talking about practice games, right? Like it's, you know, playing with your top-notch optimal list is great. And even in that case, the only reason why you're playing with that top-notch optimal list is to sharpen that, is to really sharpen your game. You know, you may want to trim some fat here, add some stuff here. I think another interesting thing that people can do is play for the long shots. This is something that I can't remember who it was I had a conversation with way, way, way back when I was working for Games Workshop. But they came in and they asked, like, well, how do I, you know, I'm constantly having this problem where, like, I never want to move. Like, I never want to take my army forward. Like, I'm always waiting. I'm always waiting for the sure bet. Like, I'm always waiting to pick my fights, he says. And I find that I'm always just getting, you know, knocked back, or I find that I just can't react fast enough, or my army's not flexible enough to deal with armies that I'm fighting. And it wasn't that he was the general was timid with what he was doing, but it was just that he always found that he was always the guy waiting. He always wanted to go second, right? Like, and it was that mentality of like, well, as long as I always go second, I can always react as opposed to act.
Yes.
And what I had told him at the time was, I want you to play a game where you kind of throw any ambition that you have of winning out the window. And I want you to go for nothing but the long shots. You know, go for what you think is just that. This is back before you could pre-measure, but go for the long shots. Go for the things that are at that extreme range. Like, don't always go for the sure bets, and play it just very, very aggressively and kind of see where you land and just see what feels good and what feels bad. Because if you're always afraid of that failure, if you're always afraid of making the wrong choice, you don't even know what the right choice looks like unless it's a sure bet. Yeah. So in a lot of cases, just playing a game or two where the ambition of winning is gone and you understand that this is a practice game and your goal is to just reach for that goddamn rainbow and just literally go for like the longest shots you can get and just see what happens and see what feels good, see what feels wrong, see what works, see what doesn't work. And it takes 3 or 4 games playing with that mentality before you really start to understand, again, the extreme limitations of your army, as opposed to just always playing within that sure bet field. I think he played dwarves, and I think that was why it was such a problem back in 6th or 7th edition, was that he kept saying, like, well, I play dwarves, and I hear people always talking about saying, oh, but you can play them aggressively. And he's like, I just don't understand how you can play this army aggressively. You know, and I gave him a couple tips on, like, how you can play aggressively and which units to use. But, you know, he wanted to stick with Ironbreakers. He wanted to stick with Longbeards. He wanted to stick with, you know, hammerers, because he just couldn't get past this idea that bait units and unbreakable units and his gyrocopter even were expendable, and that he needed to just use them to push the pace of it and pick his fights. And so in 40K or fantasy, because I actually had a very similar conversation. Who was it with? I think it was Brian with his Khorne army. And Brian and I have been going back and forth talking a little bit about Chaos Space Marines lately. Oh, what's that giggle for, Nathan?
Oh, no, I was just I wasn't giggling at Chaos Space Marines. I was just, you know, remembering story, you know, just reminiscing.
The back in the day. Yeah, yes. Well, I remember that he was playing orcs and he was saying to me, like, but I'm playing Khorne, so I have to be aggressive. He's like, but I can't be aggressive against orcs because orcs will destroy me because they outnumber me and there is all these problems and this and that. And I told him at the time, what you need to do is force him to bottleneck. And the only way to force him to bottleneck his army is to be aggressive as shit and just get right in the middle of where you want to go with the terrain and just be so aggressive that, like, again, orc players, you know, they're like any combat army player. It's a lot of straightforward, and the first opportunity to charge, they take it because they don't want to get shot, right?
Yep.
There's just too many shooting armies out there in Warhammer 40,000 that when you play orcs, and again, I'm guilty of this as well because I do it all the time with my orc army, and then in hindsight, I sit there and I go, shit, should not have done that. But it comes down to, like, well, if you put yourself in the proper position and you leave yourself vulnerable, the majority of players are going to come right at you thinking that numbers and, you know, everything else that comes with playing that Horde Orc or Tyranid or whatever type army is going to win the day for them. But if you make that army bottleneck where then that combat stops up two other units from getting into combat and allows you to pick your fights in an ideal situation, like, you'll be able to do that and still feel like you're being aggressive as opposed to just waiting until he gets right up on top of you and then you have to just slug it out and hope for the dice on the edge of the board, no less.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, and that's one of the things that I always had to do with my Dark Eldar whenever I played against like foot slogging orcs, you know, because it was just one of those things where, you know, I know
that was what your witches were for.
Dude, combo charge witches and incubi, but always pick like the one unit on the hard flank because now it's just like, okay, so the three on the other side of the board will never get into this fight. So yeah. Now it's just like, I wiped out 30 orcs on that one charge, which, you know, I should. I'm combo charging like fucking 800 points into that unit. But now you're absolutely right. He's got the bottleneck where he can throw one unit in, but even that second unit, if he starts to swing that way, is too far out. So it's just like, at that point, it's just like, you know, you're basically only having to deal with one big mob of orcs a fucking turn. You know, and then he, you know, it forces the orc general to decide, you know, am I going to, you know, how much of my weight am I going to shift to this way? And then that starts opening up holes. And again, you know, it's all about maneuvering in situations like that. But if you are not aggressive enough, he's able to hit you as a wall and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, that's the thing is the, you know, the these are all sort of good ways to practice for an event. And I mean, if I was going to recommend or prescribe like a regiment of, you know, if you are serious and you know you're looking for the W at the tournament, I would say that, you know, 6 weeks, you know, a month to, you know, 4 to 6 weeks out from the event, that is when you start practicing. But practice with the, you know, the fucked up shit. Practice with blind deployment. Take stuff out of your lists. Make giant gaping holes in your list. And play as many games as you can like this. And really only until you're in that sort of 10 to 14 day out period do you want to come back to your tournament list and then start taking everything that you've learned, every situation that you've played in, and start applying it to playing your tournament list. Because at that point, you want to be familiar with your list right before the day of the tournament. You know, and another thing, and I know this works great in 40K, less so in fantasy, but even then, I think fantasy with the new scenarios, this can work really well with. One thing I actually read, and I give them flack forever, but the Bell of Lost Souls guys, you know, Goat Boy, Darkwind, and J-Wolf do this a lot when they prep for a tournament, is especially if the tournament runs different than rulebook scenarios. But what they'll do is they'll roll up a normal game, you know, they'll deploy, they'll do all that, seize the initiative. They will play the first turn and then reset, play it again. And then they'll play the first turn and they'll reset and they'll do that again. And for 40K, I think more than fantasy, this is ideal because, I mean, in 40K, a great first turn can win you the game. You know,
it definitely can.
You know, depending on your army. I mean, granted, these are all the guys that advocate nothing but alpha strikes, where it's just like, no. It's literally about I go first, I hit you so hard you can't win, ta-da. But I really think that when you are playing army, you know, playing games, don't even, you know, maybe not just play the first turn, but play the first two or the first three turns, because typically by the end of turn three in both fantasy and 40K, I find that the game is almost decided.
Right.
You know, sure. I mean, it, you know, sometimes they can go down to the wire bottom of turn seven, but you can look at that and then just reset and get used to how you want to start a mission and start a scenario. And, you know, and with fantasy, like I said, I think what's really good about this is, you know, with all six of the rulebook scenarios, you all have varying, you know, difference in deployments, yep, meeting engagement. You know, you can get fucked on which units get pulled out.
Yep.
You know, and Dawn Assault. Dawn Assault is the big one. But even Blood and Glory, where it pins you in away from the table edges. So, I mean, it's one of those things where you should be familiar with how you're going to deploy your army, how you're going to, you know, open up. And if you play this way, I mean, because really, if you were playing a game of fantasy where everyone's got their armies out and you're only playing the first three turns, you can easily do that in 45 minutes to an hour. So if you're going to spend the night doing this, you're going to get four, five, six practice games in the same time that you could play two with your full list playing to, you know, playing through to the end. And it's just giving you the experience at, you know, at really just learning the tempo of a mission. And I think that that is vital because, again, there are a lot of players who, when they get to tournaments and they've been practicing their list, they kind of lose sight of the mission, you know, because they're used to their list where it's just like, well, in this situation, I can table him if I'm able to do this, this, this. And then, you know, he misses one dice roll, loses the game on scenario because, again, he just, you know, he goes for the throat. He misses out the tempo of what he needs to do to win. And when you just practice the first half of, or first portion of a game, that is when you're able to sort of figure things out, learn the tempo, specifically learn how to deploy in these scenarios. And, you know, and again, if the tournament like Adepticon, they run their custom scenarios. So, I mean, it, you know, and they publish them ahead of time. So this is one of the things where it's just like, no, you should be practicing those scenarios doing the first three turns because you need to know how the new deployments are going to affect the
way
you play your list, how you deploy your list, how you want to move out, what are game winning strategies, you know, because a lot of, you know, there, you read some battle reports online and it's just like, well, the scenario wasn't really that balanced and so I didn't catch it when I read it the first time. I was able to jump out and win because I wasn't paying attention. You know, and you can avoid all of that shit by doing practice games like that.
Yeah. No, and that's definitely what it comes down to. I think what you said specifically about playing the tournament scenarios, if you have them available at the beginning, is it does give you a really, really good idea of what to do. Because I know that I've been at many tournaments, and especially the Out of the Basement one, which was the last one that I played in for fantasy. Two of those scenarios I deployed going, you know, by turn three, I was like, ah, fuck, that was a bad idea. That was a terrible way to deploy my army. And it really just came down to like, ah, you know what? But you fuck that up once and you learn, but it's too late now. So, you know, taking the time to do that kind of stuff, I think it is really helpful. But honestly, I think one of the real weird side effects of doing this type of practice gaming, and I know that it doesn't really appeal to a lot of people, but there is actually a chance that at some point during these practice games, you will have fun. And I apologize
if it
upsets people. But you might actually enjoy playing a blind deployment game for fun. so, you know, just fair warning to the people out there who don't like fun.
Listen, I only have fun when my net list wins every game.
Damn right.
And you're missing out if you don't. That's all it is.
All right, so let's move on to the stupidity check for this week. It comes down to me. This is one that I honestly have been kind of looking at for a while, pondering whether or not I should do. Just because it's like, I think anybody who runs a blog or who has ever run a website, who has ever looked at anything that allows comment threads without some sort of like enter this code that appears on screen, you're always going to get these really weird automated comments. And for the Jaded Gamercast site, there was a couple that we get. We get quite a few of them, but there was one that I read that said, oh my God. And this was from like Viagra 12 at, you know, bigfatdick.com or something like that. But it was just like, I was at DEF CON 5 until I read this weblog. I was just like, wow. Because I understand that the idea behind these is that you're supposed to be trying to sucker the people running the sites into hitting approve so that your shit actually gets on the site and then that promotes your site through search engine politics. But like we get some really hilarious ones where it's just like, for your weblob sometimes does not work. And that's from Sack Hermes B. Kearney. What the fuck is going on with this? And it's just like Jaguari 461 at Hotmail. And you're just like, what is he even selling? I can't even figure out what this guy's trying to sell. But he's got some automated spider program that goes through and just auto posts these like super spam shit. But there was one where it's just like, hey, glad to have found this insightful thread. This page is exactly what I was looking for. Great stuff. Can't wait to tell my friends about this. From Saving Money Online at Earth910 at LiveJournal. You're just like...
LiveJournal? LiveJournal?
Oh my God.
They're not even trying anymore. Someone's
going to start quoting Friendster pretty soon here. But like it's... Oh my God. Like there was one here that's just like... Thanks for awesome posting. It saved much time, smiley face, from attorneyasap.com/bankruptcy. And I was just like...
Wasn't that on your Fuck the Police and Ninjas blog, too?
There was one that literally, like, I posted the Fuck the Police blog and Ninjas. But we got an email, actually, to Jaded Gamercast where somebody was saying, like, hey, we're from this advertising program, and we want to advertise on your post here. So, like, you send us an email back, and then you can post this banner, and then we'll give you some money from, like, whatever comes through. And I was just like, do you really... I was like, is there anybody out there who really wants to sell something on a post labeled Fuck the Police and also Ninjas? Are you really reading what's going on? But that's also freaking...
That is a niche demographic.
That's fucking Maelstrom Games, too, when they came through and posted like some random post on our website saying like, oh, well, we're not going to hold Finecast anymore, yada, yada. You know, like we can't ship to here and there anymore. It was their...
Oh, no. Yeah, it was hilarious, too, because he even started it off with, he was just like, you know, we really appreciate, you know, fans of our store. And I'm just like, whoa,
slow buddy.
Down there.
Sponsor section.
Yeah, like, dude, we recommend people never, ever spend money at your store. And then you're posting this fucking robo ad because, you know, at one point it was just like, yeah, you know, we're totally sorry. We can't carry GW product anymore because of this and that. But tell you what, enter this code for like 30% off anything else in the store. And I was just like...
Oh, that's what I edited out of it, is I was just like, no, fuck it. I'm not advertising this shit. Yeah. I didn't even put the... I think I ended up went back and misspelled the link to Maelstrom. So it's Maelstrom again.
Excellent.
Anyways. Oh, Lord. Fuck. But anyways, I just figured that's worth one. I wanted to share it at least once with the fucking spam mail. I wanted to go back and take a quick moment to talk about our viewer poll from last week. You know what? It's your fault, Nathan.
Fuck all of you.
No,
fuck
it's your fault.
Fuck every last one.
Because you say something like, yes, fuck you, Nathan. And how are people not going to click on that one? It's no, your own
they even,
damn
they, fault. They even split the yes. Someone came out, you know, because I left it open. Because, you know, honestly, I always find the fun thing about Facebook polls is not when you lock it down and you're, you know, you're a dick like that. Where you're just like, no, only play in my sandbox. But when you're just like, no, let's see. Let's see what other people are going to say. But yeah, it's just like someone put up another yes, which also got more votes.
Which also got more votes, yes.
Than the no option that I listed. You know, luckily someone else then did a write-in for the no that got like two or three votes. Where it's like, no, it's a $135 board game.
Yeah, I thought that one was fun. And thank you to the people who voted no. But for all the people who voted yes, yeah, we'll do it.
Fuckers. Fuck. Every last one.
I love
the voted no. I love you. Maybe we'll come up with swag for you at a later date.
I still blame you though. This is your fault, Nathan. I tried to play it cool where I was like, yeah, you know, we wouldn't really want to do it. It's expensive. And then you come back with, oh no, fuck. I'm gonna. And then yeah, when you post yes, fuck you, Nathan. How are people not gonna click on that? Although I did like how you and your wife both tried to vote the nose up to get it going. I at least abstained.
You know, I was going to, like, yeah, I wanted to abstain, but I was just like, no, I do not want this at all. No. Like, so I'm just like, fuck it, I'll vote. My wife will vote no. Like,
all right.
I should have just started making fake Facebook accounts, applying to get into the group, and then voting no.
That would have been hilarious. Peyton Nolan says no. Oh, man. But anyways, so yes, we will do Dreadfleet begrudgingly for the people who listen to the show. I'm not even going to say fans. For the people who listen to the show, we'll do Dreadfleet, and we'll try to make it fun and see how we enjoy the game. Hopefully it's really good, because we already have a pretty bad attitude about this game. It better be fucking amazing, or this game is just going to get the shit torn out of it. But hey, if you're a big fan of semen, Dreadfleet, coming on out. Oh, you knew I meant that. All right. Anyways, this has been a very hungover, jaded GamerCast. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.